Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Horticulture Week podcast. I'm Rachel Forsyth, senior reporter at Hort Week, and this week I'm joined by Carol Adams. Today we're going to be finding out a lot more about Trentham, a 725-acre estate in Staffordshire, where Carol oversees grounds and wildlife schemes as head of horticulture and biodiversity. Thank you so much for being with us, Carol. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Yes.
Good, good. Are you ready for Christmas? Do you have any sort of fun traditions that you do?
Yeah, I'm sort of getting ready. I mean, we've been so busy at work, so we've got a big Christmas lights event on at the moment. So, and we're busy working on lots of biodiversity projects as well and getting planning applications through. So, lots going on. So I think Christmas will kind of just hit me in a wave.
Yeah, it usually does that way, doesn't it? So what's your background? Have you always kind of been interested in biodiversity?
Yeah, I mean, I think, as a child, as you might have gathered from the accent, I grew up in Scotland and was out and about in the countryside a lot. Had originally been sort of interested in forestry, but then actually trained in horticulture. And I've done lots of different roles within the horticulture sector. And more recently, in the sort of last 7 or 8 years, joined Trentham originally as the garden team manager, but have progressed through and I'm now working more broadly, working with the estate as well and looking at restoration of the broader estate and landscape management, as well as how we develop the garden. So yeah, it's been an interest of mine all the way through.
Yeah, so we'll hear about some of those projects that you're working on in a bit. But what are some of those other roles you've worked on in the past?
So when I very first started out, I did pre-college work experiences you had to do back then, working at Hopetoun House up in Scotland in a historic landscape parkland and plant nursery and garden centre, and then went on to work at Bristol City Council for a period, gaining experience whilst I was training, then went into landscape design and garden design with Bridgemere Nurseries, doing domestic gardens and commercial sites and things like Chelsea Flower Show.
Oh, lovely.
And then went on from that into houseplant management of all things.
Okay.
So sort of totally different and retail and buying and sourcing plant material for the Tillington Group, as was then. Then I had a stint, quite a long stint in education and went into further and higher education at Rees Heath College. Mm. And then had another change. You know, I think it's one of the amazing things about horticulture is there's so much diversity in job roles, and had an opportunity to join the team at Trentham, and that's been fantastic as well. So it's lots of different interests. You know, it's always been It's always nice to do something different and challenge yourself, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And that is a real mix of a lot of different things. But do you think that kind of helps you in your role today?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you get this sort of common threads running through a lot of those, you know, and it's a lot of it's about engaging people with what you're doing and the sort of research and learning, you know, and they always say every day's a school day, don't they? And I think, you know, in horticulture particularly, it's the case. And I've just found that, you know, the sort of challenges in thinking about sustainable horticulture and being able to be hands-on involved in that and looking at, you know, sort of broader landscape management and the public engagement that we have here at Trent and all the challenges that, you know, sort of climate change present and restoration of a historic landscape, you know, is all, you know, really challenging and interesting, but yeah, it uses a lot of the skills that I've developed over the years.
Absolutely. And before we kind of dive into what you guys are doing around biodiversity at Trentham, I wonder if you could just describe it for us briefly. What could we expect to find there?
Yeah, so we're a 725-acre estate. Used to be one of five of the Duke of Sutherland's estates around the country. And Trentham was originally designed by Charles Bridgeman, and then the Duke got Capability Brown in, who created a mile-long lake in a valley fed by the River Trent, on the outskirts of Stoke-on-Trent. The garden was developed with alongside of a sort of an escarpment that is planted with an oak, predominantly oak woodland, which is now a site of special scientific interest because of its age and diversity, and particularly endangered insect species and bird species. But we also have lowland heath, we have wetland, we have obviously the lake, and we have the garden setting that was then remodelled by Charles Barry in the Victorian period, and was at the time an Italianate parterre garden that was bedded out each summer in its entirety. And the estate, when the Sutherlands passed it on and moved on to other projects and other properties, then was managed as a visitor attraction, as they had started themselves. And, you know, went through various changes in ownership until St Modwen took it on 20 years ago. And it's gone through a major restoration with contemporary planting designs replacing the traditional bedding schemes. So we've been working with Tom Stuart Smith, Pete Udolph and Professor Nigel Dunnett in creating very contemporary sustainable planting schemes, which happened to, you know, I don't think we originally intended to create the biodiversity and the ecosystem services that we have, but it transpires that it has achieved that, and the way that has changed how we're looking at the estate and how visitors interact and enjoy the estate. It's not purely just about us being a beautiful contemporary garden, you know, sandwiched between the M6 and Stoke-on-Trent, you know, with really good accessibility. It's become more than that, if you suit me.
That's really interesting that you didn't set about to create that biodiversity, but it's kind of happened as a happy coincidence. Do you think that is the best way to go about then developing that biodiversity? You kind of need to have it there first to create it, or can you create it from not a lot?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're in a position where, because we're on the River Trent corridor, that gifts us some of what has arrived on site and also presents us with other problems. You know, we have the Himalayan balsam and the Japanese knotweed issues and the litter issues that come with the river that comes through a major conurbation. But it also enables otters to re-establish within the garden estate as well, and kingfishers, which are, you know, a big draw for the public. And we've been able to reconnect with the broader estate. So there was a landscape management restoration plan drawn up at the outset to restore the landscape setting, which had been significantly quarried, for example, to create the M6 motorway, and had been managed more intensively for agriculture. And we've been able to restore that through higher level stewardship work that we've been doing with Natural England, and also working collaboratively with regional organisations like our local Wildlife Trust, Canal and River Trust, the Environment Agency. So lots of different organisations in looking at sort of individual projects around the estate, but actually then creating sort of corridors that have enabled connectivity, and restoring the landscape has enabled things to reconnect from us. You know, we've got Cannock Chase not too far away in terms of gifting. We've got woodlands and agricultural land fairly well connected to the landscape, even though we've got major roads on either side of us. It has been kind of almost not the primary intention when the gardens were being remodeled to create the biodiversity, but it certainly has achieved that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm kind of getting from that it's been really a collaborative effort.
It is. And I think, you know, we've been working with, you know, even sort of more recently, local small groups. So, for example, the Barn Owl Trust, the Staffordshire Barn Owl Trust, Staffordshire Mammal Group, our local Staffordshire Bat Group, as well as some of the further and higher education colleges and universities in the area, which enables students to get involved. It enables us to work collaboratively and create opportunities for both our team to develop and also to make connections with individuals who are very, very specialised and very passionate about particular topics. And it's kind of facilitating that joined up approach of kind of appreciating what you've got. Don't think, you know, the surveying work, particularly in identifying what you've got, is so, so specialised for some of the species that we've got here that, you know, those species have been here for years in our SSSI, for example. You know, our staff wouldn't have the ability to identify, you know, with the best will in the world, some of the very, very obscure insects that we have there. So we kind of have unique Staffordshire records, but I think we've probably got unique Staffordshire records because we've facilitated that survey work, if you see what I mean, rather than it being that we're just the only site in Staffordshire that happens to have certain insects.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you mentioned back when you were talking about the biodiversity there, otters and things like that.
Yeah.
And I believe you've recently reintroduced voles as well, is that correct?
We have, yeah. So, you know, looking through the records, one of the things that I did when I took on the role that I'm now doing was contact the county archive and looked at what the records were for animal species that we'd got and what had been here. Mm. And one of the things that came up was that we'd had water voles, but we had lost water voles. And I contacted our river restorations manager at the Wildlife Trust and sort of said, oh, you know, could we have a look at this? Can we have a walk around? And we had a really good walk of the site and discussed the potential. And he suggested we contact Derek Gow, who's, you know, lead rewilding specialist in the UK. And we asked Derek to come and have a look at us. And he was very excited about our habitats that we'd now got. And when you look at before and after photographs of how it looked pre St. Modwen starting to do what we've done with the lake, you know, you can totally see why our numbers had declined so rapidly through management techniques that had made a very clean and tidy lake margin, and introducing motorised water sports as the previous owners had done, had basically created wakes and washes, and you know, had got bank access everywhere and short mown grass. And we'd come in and planted thousands of UK marginal species around the lake and got rid of having motorised sports and gone into rowing and canoeing and sort of bell boating activities on the lake. And you could see it in the bird population was there and the insect population was there. We've even got harvest mice in the margins and small numbers of water shrew, but had no water voles, and there weren't water voles regionally to repopulate Trentum.
Right.
You know, we'd been managing mink for the last 10 years because we'd had fur farms with escapees and releases locally to us. So that had completely wiped out the population, and we've been working on getting that balance back, but it wasn't going to naturally happen. It needed us to do an intervention, and so you know, we committed to a budget spend, and we had to look at it as a business case of, you know, why would we reintroduce water voles to Trentum, what were the pros and cons in terms of how would it affect visitor experience, how would it affect current water use, how would it affect how we manage the site, was it going to have an impact on resourcing in a negative or positive way, were the public going to appreciate that they were here? Was it going to cause problems for them in terms of current dog walking access and how people were using the space? And we saw it as a really great opportunity to engage the public in understanding why it was okay to leave margins longer,
yeah,
and why was it good to have margins there at all, and why would we leave differential mowing and you know, go with no mow May and take it into June and take it on into the rest of the year with differential mowing in different locations, and why would short dogs on short leads for the benefit of water voles have a beneficial effect on other species that were in the spaces as well, and how could the public then think about how that would affect how they behave in the broader countryside, and it transpires that when we released over 200 voles this year in June on site, we in a week doubled the population for the county.
Oh, wow.
By all accounts from Nick Mottet, the Wildlife Trust, who's been monitoring water vole numbers across the county. So, and us enabling that to happen, and the sort of PR behind that, and the engagement that we've been doing with the public, as those voles start to spread from Trentum, you know, we're in a really good situation where we've got the River Trent beside us, we've got a number of brooks feed into the estate, and the idea is that they'll spread out from the estate and start to rewild this part of the county, and that us educating the public about the issues with mink and them reporting mink sightings and how people manage dogs' access into rivers and brooks and lakes and things like that, and those sorts of things all help to justify why we would do something like this. And choosing a species that was a daytime feeder as well was really beneficial. We found within the first week of releasing that we'd got new visitors turning up with their cameras, looking to take photographs of the water voles.
Oh, lovely. Yeah, and such a great example of how beneficial it can be to communicate to the public correctly and informatively and educate them about why these projects are so important, but also why those green and blue corridors are so important as well. So that's a really, really interesting project to hear about. Do you have any advice for gardens who are, they're looking to rewild, but they don't really know where to start? Where would you say is a really good place to begin?
I mean, we've been very fortunate that we've got really good contacts with our local wildlife trust. And I think, you know, reaching out to them would be a good starting point. Obviously, you've got nationally, there are organisations like Derek's that are working on rewilding and reintroductions. I've done a lot of sort of networking through things like the RHS as well, where we'll have partnership garden events on things like biodiversity, and you're always learning from each other as well as to who the contacts are and how to initiate different schemes. So I think that those are the sort of areas that I would look at.
Yeah, it's a very sharing industry, isn't it? So you might as well make the most of those connections for sure. Do you believe that these kind of achievements are something that domestic gardens can help with? And is it something we can achieve even in our cityscapes?
Oh, for definite, yeah. I mean, we've been working with Nigel Dunnett on planting schemes around the lake. And obviously Nigel is an ambassador for the RHS in greening the cities. And, you know, when you talk to ecologists and you take ecologists around the gardens and they're seeing the planting schemes that Nigel's created and Tom and Pete have created, and you get into those planting schemes, you know, quite often we have school groups in, for example, or students who are getting work experience, and they're in the planting schemes and they're finding voles and they're finding hedgehogs and all sorts of amazing moths and butterflies and all sorts of insects. You really are seeing how putting in a diverse food web, you know, baseline level bottom bit of your food web through diverse planting, and particularly Nigel's work, where Nigel's mixing native species with garden species, creating something that's very accessible for the public to engage with, rather than just purely going with something that's a native mix. Where we've got planting schemes that are flowering literally for 12 months of the year, in woodland meadows, for example, and we look at the biodiversity that's come into that area of woodland by comparison to when it was a rhododendron woodland, you know, a Victorian remnant of, you know, sort of Victorian plant collecting. And we had to clear our rhododendron because of the risk of disease. And so we were given a grant for funding from the Forestry Commission to remove huge quantities of rhododendron ponticum from the woodlands. And the life that was in there post that happening was very poor. And obviously creating a garden within that has really engaged the public, you know, whether it's, for example, now flowering with some primrose content and hellebores, but will be flowering well through to the spring, summer, and then autumn with asters and rebeccias and all sorts of things in there. So, you know, I think there is an opportunity to engage the public in creating these things and showing how easy they are relatively to look after, you know, demystifying and making life less complicated. You know, when they see our team out there with hedge cutters or strimmers, and we're cutting back the herbaceous perennials and raking it off, and it's like, oh, I thought this was going to be really difficult and really complicated to look after this complexity of planting scheme. And it does have its challenges, you know, but it's really not as difficult as the public perceive. And when you start doing walks and talks with them, or even just that sort of casual conversation as the gardeners are working in the garden, you know, the public are really engaging and kind of asking and tootling into the garden centre beside the gardens and looking for the plants that they've seen that have inspired them.
That is so lovely to hear. It really is. What can we expect from Trentham in the coming years?
So we're working on more reintroductions, more rewilding of species that aren't currently at Trentham, looking at what can be achieved with that. We've been doing a lot of work in terms of nest box development and bat box development as well, so that helps the particularly migratory bird species that we've been getting nesting on the estate. We're focusing on connecting up our horticultural areas. So we started out because, you know, money is an object. It's not, you know, that there's an infinite amount of money to spend on these things.
Yeah.
It's very much about we create a sort of hub spaces of colour and interest periodically around the landscape to draw people to those locations. And it's now about connecting those up, connecting those sections together with ribbons of planting and facilities like seating to make it more accessible. So we're looking at developing that. We're looking at developing our shrub and tree layers within the garden setting and looking at how we engage and get the public interpreting more of what we're doing. And working more with school groups. And we've been doing things like wildlings with our local wildlife trust. So we've been doing toddler groups as well as school group visits to really sort of reinforce how people can interact with the outdoor space.
So, so important. Oh, well, it's been so interesting to hear more about Trentham and what it's achieving. And we really look forward to seeing how it develops in the coming years. The last question we always ask our guests is, what plant would they take to a desert island? So do you have your plant, Carol?
I'm one of these people that's so spoilt for choice. That's the problem.
Yeah.
I think we'll go seasonal because we're sort of coming into the winter at the moment. I think it would probably need to be a witch hazel at this time of the year. Something like Arnold Promise for fragrance and colour, something to look forward to.
That beautiful choice there. Thank you, Carol. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
Lovely. Thanks very much for having me on.
I'm Rachel Forsyth, and this has been the Horticulture Week podcast. Make sure you never miss one. Subscribe or follow Horticulture Week podcasts via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or your preferred podcast platform. If you are interested in producing a podcast with Horticulture Week, email us at hortweek@haymarket.com. Huge thank you again to Carol, and goodbye for now.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.